Inspire. Educate. Connect. This is Yoga Digest, a vibrant community of passionate change makers.
I'm Jen Bodner, and you're listening to Yoga Digest Now. We feature real people and real stories. Yoga Digest is your resource for inspiration, health, and well-being. Wake up to the now with tips from the experts on being the best you, achieving your goals, and finding balance for your mind, body, and soul. The time for living life fully is now. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to Yoga Digest Now, Episode 1. I'm so excited to have with me today Jessamine Stanley, who is just breaking down the stereotypes in yoga. Jessamine, thank you so much for joining me.
Jim, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Oh, good. It's my pleasure. It's my absolute pleasure. So, Jessamine, I have been tagged in I don't know how many videos in the last several months with your video showing you do yoga and everybody telling me, talk to this girl. She's amazing. Have you heard of this girl? She's exactly what Yoga Digest embraces in terms of yoga being accessible to everybody. So I just want to kind of back it up a little bit and tell our audience a little bit about how you found yoga. What was your first yoga experience?
The first time I tried yoga, I went with my aunt to a Bikram yoga class, and she was really, really into it at the time. I was 16, and she had kind of like drank the Bikram Kool-Aid, and she was like, oh my God, you'll love it. It'll change your life. And I was like, I mean, why not go? I'm fat. I'm 16. Sounds like a great idea. And I went, and I hated it. Everything about it was just like the worst. I was very self-conscious about myself. I've struggled with body image for most of my life and been very susceptible to judgment of others. And I was just like, I can't do this. I shouldn't even be in here. It was a very dramatic, I'm paraphrasing, but it was an extremely dramatic experience. I actually go into more detail about it in my book, Everybody Yoga. But at any rate, I was like, I'm not going to practice again. I'm done with yoga. And several years later, I was in graduate school and I was going through a fairly dark period of depression. And one of my classmates was like, oh my God, you'll love it. It'll change your life. She was also drinking the Bikram Kool-Aid. She was like, it'll be so great. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I've tried it once before. It's not for me. And she just eventually wore me down and I went and I loved it. Everything about it that was so difficult had not changed. Like the intensity of the postures, since the room is so hot, just the intensity of the breathing in that kind of space was very challenging for me. But I didn't realize that it's a big problem in my life was that I had set all these boundaries for myself and I never stepped over them. And yoga gave me a space to step over boundaries that I had set in stone since childhood. And it became this like unbelievably transformational medication for me in a lot of ways, where it's like I take this medicine, this yoga, and all of a sudden I can start to see pieces of my life that feel like they're not in alignment. You know, I had come to a place where I felt like my actual existence and my goals just were not matching up together. And it was almost like I was sleepwalking through my life. Mm-hmm. But as I've started to work through that pain with the yoga, I started to see myself for who I actually am and started to really acknowledge the power and the beauty that is always within me.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I want to just note something that you said there that kind of caught my attention. You said your first yoga experience is when you were around 16 and then you decided it wasn't for you at that time. And then you tried it again a few years later in college. And so I just kind of want to talk a little bit about maturity. And how were you treated when you went to that first yoga class versus you came back more mature, more comfortable, more confident? And as we age, we know this happens, right? Just with age becomes wisdom and comfort in your own skin. Did that have anything to do with the change of heart?
I definitely think the age had something to do with me just being more open to the intensity of it. And I've actually thought, I feel like I have people who are older constantly saying things like, oh, I don't think I can do yoga because I'm older. And I see like that, because if you look at the media, it's like predominantly younger people who are photographed doing this. Mm-hmm. And I'm always just thinking like, if you are older, you actually know what it means to experience life. You know what it means to have something not work out. And when you're a child, you have no concept of that. So that when things don't go the way that you expect them to go, it's devastating. And it's just like, I can't do this. It's not even worth it to try anymore. But as an adult, you have, and especially the more that you age, you have a better understanding of, actually, I can pick myself up from this. I can dig deeper. I can, even if you've always been the kind of person who said, I can't dig deeper, I can't go further forward, whatever. I do think that age can be a helpful thing. But then that being said, I don't think that it's like specifically like you have to get older to really feel the real purpose of doing certain things. But I also, just in a general sense, I think that mindset is so much of the battle. So that if you walk into a situation thinking, if you think it's not going to be good, it's probably not going to be good. But if you determine that there's space for something that maybe you're not expecting, there's just a lot more opportunity there.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mind over matter for sure with everything in life. So another thing I want to ask you about is, because during this time, college is when you actually started to study yoga. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I was in graduate school. So, at this point, I had started to practice very regularly because the studio that I was at, I couldn't afford to practice in studios as much as people. If you really kind of look at it objectively, the Western yoga world is extremely expensive, mm-hmm. and I could not afford it. But the studio that I was going to, they had a work study where you had to practice like 4 or 5 times a week, and you had to help clean the studios, but you could practice for free.
Awesome.
And so I was practicing. Yeah, it was awesome. And I feel like all studios should have this as an opportunity. Yeah, because it not only is going to expose, I mean, this was at a Beacom studio, so it's all the same style, but at a studio where there's lots of different styles, then you get people who are more knowledgeable about like the whole world of, at least just like getting an idea of what hatha yoga is, just on a larger scale, not just that one thing that you do that one time at the same time every week, the same class. But at any rate, that's neither here nor there. But practicing gave me the confidence to leave graduate school, which was making me really miserable, and I moved to Durham, where I live now. And when I moved to Durham, I didn't have any money to practice in studios. I barely had money to make rent. And so I kind of stopped practicing for a little while. And it was just like a couple months. But during that time, some really sad things happened. My aunt passed away very unexpectedly, and my grandma passed away unexpectedly, and my then girlfriend's brother passed away unexpectedly. And it was just like all these things happened in very quick succession to one another. And I found myself being pulled back into the place of depression that I'd been in before. And I was like, what was I doing before that was making me feel good? Yoga? Okay, that's, I just got to figure out a way to do this. I can't practice in studios, but I can find a way to do this. And so I started just building my home practice by taking the postures from the Bikram sequence that I felt comfortable practicing on my own and working them together into some hybrid of a flow. I still at this point wasn't really familiar with flowing as a concept, because this is kind of going someplace else, and I feel like if you only ever practice one style of yoga, any style of yoga, if that's the one thing that you do, and if you don't explore lineages or anything, you have a very small understanding of what asana practice is, and then what the whole practice is, period. It's just going to be limited to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. But because I was practicing at home, I started to look at all of these resources online, and I found so much about this world, not just about asana, but about the whole of what it means to walk the 8-limb path, and what it means to like to sit with the self, and to try to really come to terms with these ideas, and it turned into this obsession where there's never enough, and I still feel this way, there's just never enough information that for me to devour. And it turned into learning about lineages and learning about like, you know, the learning about the stories that build the basis for this, and then like learning about how these stories are not just things that came up on one continent, that these are truths that have been come to conclusions that were come to by all different kinds of people across the globe throughout time. And that has turned into like a lifelong education that I am grateful to have discovered at a relatively young age, so that hopefully I can just continue learning forever.
Absolutely.
But it's also like, it is my great love affair at this point. It's
awesome.
Just,
that's so good.
Knowledge of itself. Yeah.
So you're talking about, you know, studying essentially the limbs and perhaps the sutras. And so that leads me to the kind of the next topic I want to cover with you, Jessamyn, as a huge inspiration to so many people out there that are suffering, you know, from being labeled and feeling insufficient. It doesn't matter what you look like, right? On the outside, mm-hmm. everybody can beat Absolutely. Themselves up on the inside. So you really are a true inspiration to so many. I have to ask you, who is it that inspires you? Who are some of your mentors?
Biggest mentors are people who are not even necessarily yoga practitioners, but people who, and I can't even really think of names offhand, but it's usually people who exist in their truth, who do not apologize for who they are, even if I don't agree with their opinions. To see people who live in their truth and who do not like, or at least who appear to, who do not, kowtow to the opinions of other people, who even whenever their thoughts are offensive to others, that they still stand by them. That to me is understanding of the self. Like that is yoga in practice. It's just accepting the truth as it is without explanation. And I've had a number of teachers who have really pulled this point home for me. I mean, in particular, Michael Johnson, who's based out of, I did my yoga teacher training in Asheville Yoga Center. And so a lot of the teachers there really profoundly impacted me. Michael Johnson, Kimberly Perrier, Stephanie Keach, Shayla Worsley, Joe Taft, like they completely changed the way that I understood the practice because they're such genuine, Ryan, who just passed away, he is so much of what I know about Iyengar yoga. And I'm getting a little bit choked up thinking about Ryan, but the people who, through their own honesty about themselves, are able to inspire me to be honest about myself. That is, big for me, because I feel like there's a tendency for us to focus on the negative in this life, and for us to, especially the negative parts of ourselves. But excuse me. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that yoga has done for me is to help pull me into the present moment so that I can recognize all of the good things, that even the bad things are good things. This is something that my teachers have really helped me to get to. And when I started photographing my practice and really looking at my body and all of those body issues I was talking about before, I started to really think like, actually, I am strong and powerful. Maybe my body, which I've always seen as a negative, maybe and as like a point of pain, maybe that's not what it is. Maybe my body is something to be embraced. And that's just one area. Like the physical body is what we all get kind of caught up on, but that's just one thing that has really morphed for me. And it's because of this attempt, at least, to live in an authentic and truthful state with the self. But there are also other teachers who, if I can just like, well, actually, you know what? Never mind. Because I could be out here shouting out teachers all day.
Don't hold back. It's great. I mean, and it's great to have people who you look up to and that can be, that are a reflection of you. How wonderful is it to, how great is it when you can say, Wow, I thought I was the only one. You mean you feel that way too? It's really exactly. important. It's really important. And I think, again, that's what you're providing for so many people. I mean, you're a self-proclaimed, and this kind of shocks some people to hear a person refer to themselves as a fat femme. I mean, fat mm-hmm. is like one of the F words you just don't it say, is. Right? And I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the labels. I can remember interviewing another mm-hmm. prominent yoga teacher in the community. And she said to me, even a long, long time ago, you know, yoga has had a skinny white girl problem. You know, yoga yeah. has a skinny white girl yes. problem. That's all you saw on the cover of magazines and at Yoga Digest. You know, that's something we definitely wanted to break through. So it was no surprise when people came to me with your name and showing me who you were, because you really do embrace, again, our message that yoga is for everybody, and everybody can do mm-hmm. yoga. So I want to talk a little bit about labels. You know, when you hear things, I mean, you're basically famous, right? Okay. I mean, maybe that's you don't so think weird. So. I know.
Yeah.
But you are.
I hear you.
Right? You're known. You're noted mm-hmm. For being an overweight minority yoga mm-hmm. teacher. How does that make you feel? And how mm-hmm. do you embrace or cope with that?
I think that one of the things that's helpful for me is that this experience of being the only is an experience I've had literally my entire life. Like I do talk about this in the book a little bit, but I grew up in a predominantly white community. So that it was very, I was almost always the only Black person. I always dealt with like the, and then in athletic context, you're almost always the only fat body person. And at this point, to be completely frank, I'm just really desensitized to it. And then on top of that, I have dealt with bullying from a very, very young age. And one of the benefits of that, if you can believe it, is that you then do not listen to the opinions of other people. Because at a young age, I learned that the only reason that people belittle is because they are unhappy with themselves. And if you can take that and see that really this person is just reflecting self-hate onto you, then you can feel compassionate toward them. Because it's not that there's anything wrong with you, it's that they hate themselves. And that's something that I see constantly in the people who actually take time out of their day to say something negative about me, particularly knowing that I've accepted that, yes, I'm fat, just in the same way that I am Black, in the same way that I am queer. And that's why I say that I'm femme, because I am a queer femme and I don't look queer. And so it's very important. I don't look like what people would expect a queer person to look like. And I think it's very important for me to own every single piece of myself so that other people understand that they can own themselves as well. And I think that when you're faced with people who say offensive things to someone because they've been taught that that body type isn't good, they just feel like that's how they should feel about themselves. And so then they say that to other people. But my thought when I receive negative feedback is, how did you have time to take out of your life to write this mean thing about me when I don't even have time to read your comments? Like I don't even have time to process a feeling related to this because I have other things to do. So I just always hope that people who say mean things about me can really start to find love and happiness in their lives, because it's clear that that's what's missing to really expend your energy in that way. I don't put any merit in things like that.
Preach, preach, preach. Oh it's my goodness.
Like, it's
thank
like
you
why,
for all that.
You know?
Thank you for saying all of that. How empowering, because again, you know, it doesn't matter what you look like on the outside. People go through that self abuse internally, exactly. just on the daily, regularly.
And it's a pain thing, you know, like they're dealing with pain. And I feel very much like I hope that in the way that I'm trying to push through pain, that I'm trying to find that like pain to progress journey, I hope that they can find that as well. Because like, it is awful to sit in your own shame. And I would not wish that on my worst enemy. And so, you know, whatever. Do what you got to do to feel happy. I won't be reading the comments. I don't.
So with that, then there's a flip side of that. We touched on it briefly and you got a little shy about it. And that is, you know, amongst all of the celebration, okay, and the popularity, has it changed you?
You know, that's actually precisely why I live in North Carolina and why I spend my days off, like, with my cat and my roommate and, you know, and my partner and very few other people, because I have a great paranoia about that very thing. If I can be completely frank, I have paranoia about that happening, because I think that whenever you get, when you find a detachment from who you truly are, and you don't have those people around you who are keeping you grounded and like keeping it real with you, and like, you know, it's very easy to get caught up in this like game of who likes who and what's popular and who's famous and what's famous. Because the reality of all this is that I could be not on anyone's radar tomorrow, and I want to still love myself the day after that. Mm-hmm. So I just can't, I feel like it's very important for me to have a very deep detachment from the person who is in front of other people and the person that I am in my everyday life, because otherwise I don't, and that's why I don't hold any judgment for people who do get sucked in like that, because I see what, it's like a cyclone, man, the fame cyclone, whatever, even this weird internet niche yoga fame, which is a weird kind of universe to live in and of itself, but like, even with that, it is a cyclone that you can get completely caught up in, and why wouldn't you? You know, but I remember my mom reading me The Myth of Narcissus as a child, and it has literally never left me that Narcissus died because he got caught up in his own reflection and fell into the river. So it's like, or lake or whatever. So I just kind of try to keep that in mind. And I just focus on my practice, honestly. Like I don't practice for Instagram. I practice for myself for the same reasons that I always have. And my practice has become much deeper and more complex and scary in a lot of ways than it was when I first started. And that is just for me. Like I do still post photos on social when I have something to say, but I post a lot less than I used to. And quite frankly, I think that if I did not already have this social media presence, then I wouldn't. Like, I have so many yoga teacher friends who are like, I can't with social media. That's not for me. I'm like, psh, I feel you, because I think it is sketchy. And I think it encourages egotistical attitudes and being, just a lot of energy that as a yoga practitioner, you're really trying to move away from. And it's important to just keep that in check, even if you are going to, because the other reality is that if you're going to market yourself in this day and age as a teacher, you have to have social media. And right. So I think it's just the responsibility for each practitioner to kind of figure out, like, what does that mean for me? How am I, is my identity tied up in my social media? And I think if your answer is even leaning toward you, yes, this is the time to cut it off, because that's not who you are. You know, that's not real. And making those big distinctions has been crucial for me, because otherwise I would have stopped doing this by now, for sure.
Yeah. Well, and it's surface, like you said, it's not the real you. They see what they want to see. Exactly. They see who they are, not necessarily who you are. By watching from the outside in. So I want to ask you a question.
I just love the way you said that.
you are known, again, and we'll call it popularity, fame, whatever you want to coin it. You know, I there's a term that's for these up and coming kids who are really popular on social media, not even really sharing anything in particular, but they call them social media influencers, because they really do just somehow have created these cult followings, and people are listening to them and people are paying them to advertise their products because they have a captive audience for whatever it is they're promoting. Right. But so for you, and I wanted to dial this down a little bit. You are known for being an overweight yoga teacher. Is that a fair statement to say that?
Yeah, sure.
To some extent, okay? Among other things, Jessamine, right? But let's just start with that for the
question's sake. I think that's fair.
And so I have to ask, because we had an interview with a somebody in the industry that was known for being vegan, okay? And then suffered some health issues, and the doctor said, girlfriend, you have to eat some animal protein. You have
was
to eat.
Was it the Balanced Blonde?
Yes.
I love her.
Okay, yeah, she's awesome. Sorry, she was one of our very, she was one of our very first interviews way back when, but she was berated and attacked for changing her lifestyle. So I just have to ask you, just in terms of that, do you feel like you need to now be overweight all the time, or do you?
That is such an interesting question. No one has ever asked me. No one's ever asked me to my face. I get it in comments all the time where people will be like, what are you going to do if you lose a bunch of weight and then you're not the fat yoga girl anymore? You know, is it what, how are you, like, isn't that how people know you? And I'm thinking, like, I'm not even really actively trying to have people pay attention to me. So, like, I feel like if people stop looking at me, then that's cool. Like, I'm good. But also, like, if you, like, okay, I'll play this game. So what am I going to do if I'm not fat anymore? Well, I'll still be Jessamine. So I guess there's that, you know, I'm not concerned. And also I think that, the reality of the situation is that my weight just fluctuates. So like when I first started, and I never really talk about weight because I just don't want to get it tied up in yoga because I don't think that the two things need to be related. But I think that for me, my body has changed. Like when I first started practicing, from that time to like 2 years into my practice, I lost a lot of weight during that time. But then I wrote a book. And I mean, not right after that. Obviously, there are a couple years in there. But like, there's been a lot of changes in my life, like in the last year, so that I've gained some weight in the last year. And I feel like I go through the fluctuations of human like change, just like any other person. And I'm just going to continue to do that as I always have, because I don't have a commitment to people who look at my Instagram to stay a certain size, whether that's a smaller size or a larger size. And I think that honestly, anyone who's concerned with that should really reevaluate the way that they see their own life so that they're not concerned about the weight fluctuations of a stranger. And I think that, you know, it's just going to be what it's going to be. And I don't even really, like, I actually would really like for there to just be more larger body teachers that are prominent, because then people would stop looking at me talking about it, because it's like one of the least important things of my existence, and even of my message, where I'm just like, yeah, I'm fat. A lot of people are fat. A lot of people are, you know, it's just, it kind of is. And I guess my answer is that I'm not concerned.
Yeah.
Okay. Like I don't care.
That's good to hear. And that's reassuring, because you just never know until, you know, you get to that place in your life. And you never know, Jessamine, you might have started a trend. I know I have been reached out to, by some other people, you know, kind of taking the same approach. So it's a good thing, you know, it's a good thing.
With Jordan, with the Balanced Blonde, she really, like, the whole wellness community is so fickle. Like, it's like, if you say even one thing, like if you say that you're vegan and then you slip and talk about how you ate butter like that one time 2 years ago, someone is going to be in your mentions talking about that. And so for Jordan to be like, so for health reasons, I need to eat animal-based protein, people are like, it's like a witch hunt out here. And so I feel for that, because when you say certain labels, it's like you're committing to that label, and then people see it as some kind of like a renouncing of identity. But truly, we're all on a journey. We're all constantly evolving, and we should all be respectful of the things that we need to do to make our spirits happy.
Yes, for sure. And it's just so easy to judge when you're not walking in somebody else's shoes. But I love that this is transitioning us into kind of another topic I wanted to discuss with you today, as somebody that's been in the yoga industry. How many years now, Jessamine, would you say you've actually been active in the yoga industry?
In the industry?
Yeah, like,
I would say like I'd say like a little over 2 years in the active in the industry.
Yeah. So there's been a huge shift. I mean, yoga different. Yeah. 2 years ago, 5 years ago, heck, 10 years ago. Oh my gosh. I mean, people didn't talk about it. You did yoga. You did it quietly with a DVD in your living room and you didn't even tell people, you know, that you were doing it. Now everybody's taking pictures of it. So that brings me to the next topic, and that is the future of yoga. We have all these pioneers right now, you know, all these pioneers that have such strong opinions and strong presence and strong influence. So I just want to get your opinion on where do you see yoga evolving and going in the next, let's say, couple of years?
Well, I kind of feel like yoga went from being something that only really affluent people could learn to being something that was like really hippy dippy. And, you know, it's like only people who are into natural living or the esoteric, that these are the people who are interested in it. And really, yoga is about, again, the eternal truths of humanity. So it doesn't know any of these demographics that we're talking about. Like that's not actually related to the practice. And I think that what I'm seeing more is people starting to understand that, and that as a result, the definition of how you can practice and who can practice and what it can look like is evolving along with it. And I just don't see why that would continue, why that would change, because that's what's been happening like since the World's Fair at the turn of the 20th, whenever there's all of a sudden this amazing practice that people are looking at. And it's like, who can do this? How can you do it? And I think that if we can, as much as possible, continue to see the growth and the change as a positive, that will make all the difference. But that being said, I think that there is also, so this is all the positive things, right? Mm-hmm. But I also think that there's a tendency for the yoga practice to become very superficial, where it looks just like, it's like people worshiping handstands or something. Like, I don't even understand sometimes. I'm like, is this even yoga? Like, what are we doing? It's like an obsession over having the best picture and the most likes and the most, like, all of this nonsense, where it's just like, you know, and I take a personal responsibility for that, because I think that if you see people who become successful to any degree, then that gives you something to aspire to. But you should not aspire to the success or to the semblance of success, because really the practice is still going on as it always was. And I can't control how anyone else is going to understand yoga, and I don't want to be in charge of that. I don't think anyone should want that, but I definitely don't. And so all I'm going to do is continue to deepen my own practice, and as that affects other people, particularly through the physical act of teaching, then it will affect other people. But I don't think that, I don't think there's any, I'm not personally concerned with what happens to the modern yoga world, because right now it's just a lot of like materialistic noise, honestly. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, whatever, that's its own thing. I think that people who practice yoga know what yoga is, and that's plenty. So, you know, I don't worry about it.
But good for you. You know, you're taking ownership for what you can control, and then there's that which you cannot control, and that's not your business, right?
Exactly. And this is also not me like denigrating the structure of things. Like, I love to have the best yoga mat. I love to go to different, like, I like to have nice leggings. I get it. I understand the interest in materialistic pursuits, but I just think that that's kind of what people are focusing on right now. And it's like, that's not it. I don't think that's it.
But, well, you kind of answered my question. And then the next question that I had for you, and, you know, it's like, what do you like about yoga and what don't you like about yoga? And you've done a good job of covering that. But I kind of want to just go a little bit deeper and ask you, like, what is it that really lights you up, Jessamyn? Like, what is it that just gets you highly ignited, topics, or what is it that just kind of gets you going?
Noticing compassion toward other beings on my own part, and whether or not that, because, okay, so it's really easy to get upset about things, especially when there are things that you think you can control. And I have been a control freak my whole life. It's just like, I am, like, I have to know the most, I have to be the most, I have to whatever. And when things don't go the way that I expect them to, my natural reaction is to be, it's a reflex to be aggressive toward that and to be, to put negative energy toward that. But the more that I practice and the more that I'm able to be more compassionate with myself and with my own judgments, my body, whatever, et cetera, the more that directly corresponds to my compassion in everyday life. And when there are times that, like, let's say that I get cut off in traffic, mm-hmm. if I can see, and maybe the person is like being really obnoxious about it and like they didn't signal and they're, you know, maybe they slow down even so that like I'm right up against their bumper. This is a situation where it would be very easy to be like, what the fuck? Like, even if you just let the what the fuck come out, and I have no shame on the aggressive reaction, but like being able to say, oh, okay, that happened. They must have been in a hurry, you know. It's not even like, well, I'm the victim and that person must have been in a hurry. No, it's like, oh, wow. Okay. I'm good. We're all good. We're all safe. They must have been in a hurry. I'm going to keep it pushing. You know, that kind of reaction, I'm obsessed with that because I'm like, that's growth. That's change. That's real change. That, like, I am not being the person that I have always been. I'm not being that. I'm able to step away from that ego. And I feel like that's kind of my obsession right now. And I know that it's like, it's, I know that it probably seems like, oh my God, that's something like you would be interested in that. But it's like, if you are so buried underneath the inability to accept the present moment, it is truly a triumph when you're able to accept the present moment. And to me, that is really an amazing thing when I see it.
It is. But traffic is real. The struggle is real traffic when is driving.
Real. It's real. And that's why those moments are the most profound, because it's like, I actually, my teacher, Kimberly, who I love, and this is one of the stories that made me love her. She told the story of when she was on her way to class one time and this, somebody cut her off, and it was like she had to brake really hard and all this stuff happened. And she was like screaming obscenities out the window. And she was so pissed because she was late to teach this class. And then she gets to class, and of course her student is one of the people, is the person who did this, who cut her off.
Awesome.
And she's like, oh, okay. You know, and it's like, you have this whole like eating your underwear, eating your foot, whatever the metaphor, but that knowing that that kind of thing can happen, and that you can then say, oh, how can I react? How can I approach this life? Like, what led to me feeling all of these things? And that dialogue is so rich and fulfilling, and enters into so many other aspects of life, that's definitely kind of my addiction right now.
Yeah, yoga teachers are real people too. Okay, everybody, real right?
Yes, yoga teachers are real people too.
Jessamine, you said you went to grad school. What did you study in undergrad? And just tell me a little bit about your formal education.
Yeah, I studied film and video production in undergrad, and my graduate work is in nonprofit arts management. So it's performing arts management, but nonprofit arts management. And I've worked in a lot of different arts organizations. I worked for radio stations, music festivals, dance companies, theaters. And I have always really loved that work. I love philanthropic work. I love being able to, as particularly when it comes to the arts, because the arts are so undervalued in our society. Mm-hmm. But it's also kind of funny because what I do right now is I do film and video production constantly. I do I manage my own career. So I have the nonprofit arts management is essentially what I do. And it's funny because even though I don't work in the traditional fields that I studied in, I do still work in a hybrid of those industries. So it's definitely not unrelated, for sure.
Absolutely. No, that's fantastic. And so do you have a philanthropy that you work with or support?
I do. Well, so there's a organization in Raleigh, North Carolina called JobStart, and they provide educational opportunities for incarcerated women. And I've taught yoga classes with them and just like hung out with the women there. It's an amazing organization. And I've taught a lot of, not like a lot, but a few kids anatomy classes with local schools and that kind of work. And particularly I've done a lot of college visits as well. And this isn't necessarily like a philanthropic outlet, but it is a,
outreach.
It is outreach. Yeah. And actually my big project for the next year. So I'm about to go on my book tour. And when I get off tour, I'm taking a sabbatical. And during my sabbatical, I'm planning out this whole, so it's a nonprofit based on teaching pay what you can classes around the world. Mm-hmm. Because something that I noticed when I first started teaching yoga is that there are not enough spaces for people to practice at a price point that is approachable, that is accessible to any person. And there are, I mean, you see them around, there are all kinds of donation based things around the country, but there's not enough organizations that specifically do that. Like, we are just trying to bring this. And I, when I first started teaching, that was the bread and butter of my teaching, was like setting up pay what you can classes, very DIY, in fields, in parks. And it would be like, you know, a married couple sharing a beach blanket as their yoga mat that they do together. And then they pay me in strawberries. And like, that's what they can afford. And now we can all have share space together. And I want to continue to create those opportunities, because you need them not just in Durham, North Carolina, they need to be all over the world. Sure. So that's my own like next, because I think that philanthropy is something that is accessible to all humans. And I see little kids doing it all the time, like starting their own little like nonprofit ventures, or just like being really, really generous. And I want to inspire other people who are just regular people to find ways to be philanthropic, because it's not just about working for an arts organization or working for a hospital or working for a, like a church or something like that, like a traditional nonprofit. It's about finding the need in your community and trying to fill it.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. Very unique and very cool. Tell me a little bit about your book, Jessamine. You've mentioned it a couple of times, but tell me a little bit more.
It's called Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body. It is a approach to yoga. It's an opportunity for someone who has never practiced yoga before to read through this entire book, hear the stories of my life, how I started practicing yoga, the kind of sad and in some cases tragic things that happened to me to deepen my practice. And in that same time, learn all of the basic information that anyone could use to start a basic yoga practice. And you could literally finish the book and start practicing yoga right afterwards. So
very nice.
I'm excited about it. And I think that it is something that I've heard a lot of people say that they need. And now it's finally out there.
Where can we find that?
You can find it anywhere that books are sold.
Okay.
It is literally, I think, everywhere. But Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million,
awesome.
All over the place. But yeah.
So tell me about some other things you got going on. You've shared a lot. What else are you working on? Anything upcoming? You've got the book tour. You've got your mission.
Well, I've been really lucky to partner with some really awesome brands that are actually doing things that are really not just like, you know, completely histrionic, like things that are really pointing to larger problems in our society and trying to find solutions for them. And it's been an honor to be one of the partners with Motrin's Women in Progress campaign. And it's basically helping to inspire women so that they can shift the way that they look at painful moments in life and to understand and to empower them to understand that pain can also be progress, and that there's a pain to progress journey for all of us. And that's something that I have literally lived personally. And it's been awesome to like go out, speak on panels, talk to people in real life about the pain that they suffer from in their own lives, and to show that we're all working through it together.
Well, how can our listeners get involved and support you and support this effort?
Well, you can find out all the information on the Motrin Facebook page, the Motrin website, also on my website, jessamynstanley.com. That's where you can find out about all of our upcoming events. And I also will be at the Shape Half Marathon with Motrin, talking about, the pain to progress journey and about how women can stay active throughout their whole lives.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, Jessamine, I tell you what, girl, you keep on being you. And thank you. Thank you so much again for carving out some time today to talk.
It was my pleasure. It's my pleasure, Jen. Thank you so much for having me.
All right. We'll stay in touch. You have a great rest of your day. Take care now.
You too. Bye.